Room 12, Expeditions, Exploration, and Taking Possession. In this room, we continue with our chronological history of the Magallanes region. With the end of Spanish dominion over the seas, Holland began making its own voyages to the Indies. For this purpose, the government of Netherlands joined together several small companies to form the Dutch East India Company in 1602, which eventually would control the route around the Cape of Good Hope and the Straits of Magellan for Dutch sailors. This monopoly was so successful for the Dutch government that a new wave of sailors and merchants were encouraged to set sail for the Indies. One of these was Isaac Lemaire, a rich merchant from the Dutch port city of Hoorn, who had heard rumors of a third passage to the Indies and decided to investigate them. The Dutch East India Company was established in 1621 to assist the many Dutch ships sailing to the seas. The company also served the nation strategically in its war against Spain. Before this time, Dutch sailors had been operating independently and without any form of coordination. Dutch ships had landed in the Caribbean, traded on the Brazil coast, visited the coast of Chile, and reached the shores of Peru before sailing west toward the Philippines. Through their efforts, they had developed a very profitable triangulated trading system. Textiles and manufactured goods were shipped from Europe to Africa, where they were exchanged for slaves, which were then transported to the Caribbean and Brazil, where plantation products were then loaded for Europe. Indeed, it was the Dutch who discovered the southernmost islands of the continent and the second sea-to-sea passage. The legacy of these daring explorers can be found in the region's places' names, the islands of Terhalter, Ivoot, Bernalbet, Hermit, Estados, the bays of Nassau, Orange, Windhond, Scoppenham, and San Valentin, the Gouri Pass, Lemaire Strait, and Cape Horn. After these early sailors had played their part in exploring the southern sea, a second wave of European expeditions began. This wave established the route as a channel for communication, trade, piracy, and the search for riches. Later came the famous scientific expeditions. With their explorations and discoveries, the ambitious navigators of this period helped lay the foundation for the commercial shipping boom that would occur in times to come. But not all those who sailed the southern seas were explorers, so it is worth distinguishing among these men. First of all, there were pirates and corsairs. The former were seagoing bandits, outlaws who descended upon any vessel that could provide them with booty to sell in complicit ports, or ships that were simply easy targets. The corsairs, on the other hand, were fighters commissioned by a specific government. These men held a permission to chase that allowed them to attack enemy settlements and ships in clandestine missions or during open war. Corsairs took payment from their service in the booty that they encountered, or by ransoming prisoners. When captured, they were treated as prisoners of war and could appeal to allied and neutral ports for assistance or support. Of course, the line between pirates and corsairs was quite a fine one. Then there were the buccaneers. These were 17th and 18th century pirates who were dedicated to looting the Spanish ships on the high seas. The term buccaneers originated in the Antilles, where the attackers launched surprise raids to steal cattle from the Spaniards, who were smoking and cooking meat over grills called boucans. Most buccaneers are of French, English, or Dutch nationality. Lastly, there were the filibusters, another class of pirates that infested the Caribbean Sea in the 17th century. This term may have originated in the Dutch term of freebooter, someone who lived by preying on others, or perhaps flyboater, the patron of a flyboat, which were very quick-moving ships. These kinds of sailors proliferated during those times in response to the restrictions that the Spanish crown had placed on the other European states that were anxious to develop trade with the American colonies. They operated along established trade routes, primarily those used by Spain. It is also worth mentioning that while Spain was expanding its territory in the Americas, exploring inland to the very center of the continent, navigators were opening new routes and expanding existing ideas about the southern part of the continent. With central Chile already under control, the Spanish crown began to see the need to secure the southern territory. To this end, in 1539, King Carlos V appointed Pedro Sancho de Laos, governor of Tierra del Fuego and the nearby islands. De Laos never reached the south. However, the Spaniards called upon Pedro de Valdivia. After Valdivia's untimely death, Jerónimo Alderete, who was in Spain obtaining the required terrestrial concession, was appointed governor in 1555. But when Alderete also died unexpectedly, the title passed to García Hurtado de Mendoza, who took office in 1557. he commissioned Juan Ladrillero to take possession of the lands around the Straits of Magellan. Sailing from Valdivia in southern Chile in 1558, Ladrillero reached the Straits of Magellan from the west, taking possession of the channel and the surrounding territory. From that time on, all Chilean governors and general captains included the islands of Tierra del Fuego within their jurisdiction. This is why, for instance, the renowned historian Alonso de Ovalle included these islands in his 1646 map of the Kingdom of Chile. Almost 200 years later, in 1843, the schooner Ancud sailed from the town of the same name on Chiloé Island under the command of Captain Juan Williams. On September 21st of that year, the captain took possession of the Straits of Magellan and Tierra del Fuego all the way to Cape Horn in the name of the Republic of Chile. In 1843, with Punta Arenas now part of Chile under the rule of President Manuel Bulnes, a plan was made to bring colonists from Chiloé Island to settle in these southern lands, thinking that these southern people would be more adapted to the cold climate. Around 20 people came, including soldiers and families accompanied by some animals. They built their houses and a military fort, calling it Manuel Bulnes, known today as Bulnes Fort. The fort was originally built over a five-year period from 1843 to 1848. Colonists were challenged by harsh climate, lack of vegetation, rough seas, and a lack of fresh water nearby. The landscape also offered little shelter for their animals. As the population increased, conditions became more and more crowded. Finally, in 1848, Governor José de los Santos Mardones discovered a land route to the north, and with a group of other explorers, built a road to a better site. Colonists were then sent to establish a new colony, which eventually became the city of Punta Arenas, located 60 kilometers north of Bulnes Fort. In 1851, Punta Arenas was nothing more than a fledgling penal colony under the command of Benjamin Muñoz Gamero, captain of a Chilean Navy frigate. In addition to being a naval officer, Muñoz Gamero was also a visionary, and he became largely responsible for developing the sheep ranching industry around this southern city. That year, he requested 100 sheep be sent to the city to begin a breeding program, laying the foundation for the Magallanes wool industry. The famous Bulnes Fort, a palisade structure equipped with medium-range artillery, was the scene of one of the most horrific disasters ever to occur in a Chilean city during the Spanish colonial period. As a disaster, it is comparable only to the so-called Uprising of the Seven Cities, which reduced to rubble the cities of Tucapel, Purén, Valdivia, and others in the midst of the conquest. The policy of the Chilean government was to make Punta Arenas a fortified town as well as a penal colony for those who had committed minor crimes. At that time, political insurrections were common. In fact, that same year, troops in the south had revolted against President-elect Manuel Montt, and many of the officers and soldiers that led the revolt were confined to Punta Arenas, among them Artillery Lieutenant Miguel José Cambiaso. These were turbulent times, and the colony was a powder keg. But because of the harshness of life in the south, and the human conflicts that arose within the walls of the city itself, both because of the harshness of the life in the south, and the human conflicts that arose within the walls of the city itself, accompanying Cambiaso de Punta Arenas were seven sergeants who had participated in a riot at Infantry Regiment Valdivia in Santiago. On April 20th, 1851, in a bid to depose President Manuel Bulnes, Cambiaso had been out of the military for several years before his role in Valdivia, after he had attempted to murder his wife, who was just 17 years old. The lack of officers in that region led the local authorities to reinstate him in the military and send him to the southern penal colony. On the night of November 24th, while Cambiaso was under arrest from another incident, he was set free by a guard, and with the help of the entire garrison, he took control of the barracks and the square. Joined by the prisoners, the troops looted buildings and set fire to the church, the hospital, and the government headquarters. The next day, they took command of the British schooner, Elisa Cornish, which was anchored in the bay with a cargo consisting of a small fortune in gold and silver bars destined for an English port on the Pacific. The colony's chaplain, Friar Acuña, was shot and killed, along with the governor, Muñoz Gamero, and their bodies were burned in a bonfire. Punta Arenas was abandoned by its inhabitants in January 1852, after a well-timed attack by the indigenous Tehuelches people, who ended up looting and dismantling everything in sight. In 1874, a new military mission was sent from Santiago, under the command of Sergeant Major Diego Duble Almeida, to re-establish order and reopen the prison. But the peace was short-lived at Sandy Point, but the peace was short-lived at Sandy Point, as the English called the city, In November of 1877, another violent uprising occurred, led this time by both prisoner guards and prisoners, who were upset at the harshness with which Duble Almeida ruled over the penal colony. This is perhaps the only known case in which prisoner guards joined forces with the prisoners themselves to revolt. The rioters injured the commander and he fled, along with his family and some of the other residents, taking refuge in the nearby forest. The arrival of the crew of the corvette Magallanes allowed Duble Almeida to return to Puntarenas and deal with the insurgents, who fled to Argentina. At that time, the city began a process of consolidation. The Plaza of Muñoz Gamero was built in honor of those dark days, and standing at its center is a statue of a Patagonian indigenous man alongside a colonist. Despite the city's turbulent history, the will to consolidate the efforts of the early colonists continued to drive the local authorities of Puntarenas, who encouraged the migration of people to the region, especially those skilled in trades needed to continue the city's development. Those who had already come included Chiloé Islanders skilled in sea lion hunting, those who could market their skins, house builders, ranch hands for the sheep ranches, and farmers. But workers and tradesmen were now needed who could install power lines and pave the city's streets, among other jobs. In fact, beginning in 1870, a wave of immigrants settled in the city, coming mostly from the cold countries of Europe. Swiss electrical workers came, along with Croatian road builders, as well as German and English tradesmen, among others. In the display cases before you are some objects and photographs from those times. Note the wooden washing machine, which was used to clean wool. There are also some documents issued by consulates, office accessories such as inkwells, bells, pen nibs, carafes for water or wine, and a plan of the city drawn in 1851 by Benjamin Muñoz Gamero, after whom our city's main square is named. Also on exhibit here are a rifle, a saber, the shaving bag of Juan Williams, telescopes, glass bottle from shipwrecks on the strait, compasses, a first edition of Charles Darwin's book, published in 1833, a smoking pipe from Holland, and a large vessel also known from a shipwreck. We hope you have enjoyed this segment of the historical overview we have been presenting. Let us now proceed to room number 13.